Shalayim. We're going to learn a little bit about the parsha. The psukim that I printed on the sheet from last week's parsha, Achrei Mot. But you may remember that Achrei Mot and Kedoshim are very similar in certain aspects. So I printed these psukim because of the Ramban, which we want to look at. Let's look at the first pasuk and see if we can make something of it. Al titamu b'chol eila. Do not allow yourselves to become tmeim, unclean. Now, of course, the word titamu is a hard word. I mean, what is it that I'm supposed to prevent ourselves from doing? And so we know that the two strong issues for the Torah are arayot, sexual deviation, and avodah zarah. And very often these things are done together. There's a together aspect between sexual indiscretions that we saw by Pinchas, it'll come up soon, and avodah zarah. That the avodah zarah, I mean, after all, the Moabite women came to destroy Am Yisrael and get them all involved in idolatry. So you see that there is a certain kind of connection. So the pasuk says, "Al titam'u b'kol eila." Do not allow yourselves to become tamei. The key is not exactly a rationale, but it's something worth thinking about. B'chol eila nitme'u ha'goyim. The goyim, the nations, asher ani mishalech b'pneichem, that I am sending away from this place, the place called Eretz Kinaan. I'm sending away all these goyim, and that reminds us of an interesting, of an inch. I'm sorry, I didn't get it. So David sent a. Send it again. I'll try to get it. Again, the first Rashi in the Torah asked the following question. Why? It's Jews and I always got it. Balaam tried to curse the Jews. I didn't get it. Oh, here. Let's do it.
Lauren, I was going to say that Balaam tried to curse the Jews, but Hashem reversed the curse. The word destruction, if you look at it backwards, is Melech, is king. So he reversed the curse.
Yeah, but at the end, Balaam gave advice to the Moabites, and they sent the women to entice the people to become. Entice the people to do idolatry. So, in that regard, Balaam was actually successful. Okay. So, let's look again. The first Rashi in the Torah, Balaam asked the question. Rashi asked the question, why does the Torah start with Bereshit? Why do we have to know how God created the world? What we really want to know is, what are we supposed to do? What does God want of us? That would be more relevant. And therefore, the Torah should have started from the first mitzvah that was given to Am Yisrael, which is the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, the declaration of the new moon. That was given to us with the words Chodesh Zelachem. Chodesh, months are given to you, Bnei Israel. You decide what's going to be. Right? That's the question that Rashi asks. The answer that Rashi gives is that we had to understand that creation is something that could be done by God only, and even undone by God if necessary. So what is undone by God? Where is creation undone by God? So Rashi says, the first Rashi says, Asher ani mishalech mipneichem. He doesn't quote this pasuk, but for us, we're here. Asher ani mishalech mipneichem. I'm sending them away. What does Rashi say? Rashi says, the people who lived in Eretz Canaan, the people who lived there when we came on the scene, led by Yoshua ben Nun, we're going to capture the land. Asher ani mishalech mipneichem. Asher ani mishalech mipneichem refers to the nations that would be sent away from Eretz Canaan. So Rashi says the agents of the people who lived in Eretz Canaan, they came and they said, what do you want from us? God put us here. We're here because God put us here. So how can you come and fight us and chase us out of Eretz Canaan? You're going to be doing something against the divine will. And therefore, the Torah wanted to teach us, and also teach the rest of the world, that just as God can create a reality, God can undo that reality for a higher cause, if there is one. So Bnei Israel were offered the land of Israel through Avram Avinu. And when Yoshua ben Nun came in to conquer the land, that was the only possibility. That was the only possibility. And therefore, we learned at that time that everything can be attributed to God's will, even if it seems to contradict what God willed at an earlier time. And so the people who come and say to us, don't attack because God put us here, we say, no, we have a new message from God, which is that you've got to leave. So that's what these words mean. I'm sending them away. Send these people away. The next pasuk, the whole country, as I said, I don't know exactly what the word titma means, but it's not positive. Titma haaretz, it became defiled somehow. You know, defiled is also the demands a kind of a interpretation. Vefkod avona aleha, and I will remember, and I'll remember its sin, the sin that it sinned on the land, the things that have been takia aretz et yoshvea, and the land will vomit them out, right? Vomit them out, and now you have. You have this understanding that the people who lived there, because they were idolatrous in their nature, and they coupled the idolatrous with sexual offenses, you, however, are charged with keeping the Torah, chukim and mishpatim, velotasu mikolato evota eile, and don't do all these horrible things that the Canaanites did. And this refers to all the people who were part of Am Yisrael in any way, manner, or form. Pasuk of Zion. All these terrible things that are listed in the parasha of Achrimot. And then again, in the parasha of Kedoshim, these terrible things that they did. Asher lifneichem, who were there before, but titma aretz, they kind of they made the land somehow unclean. And then the pasuk finalizes. It says lo taki aretz etchem, and then the land will not expel you. You'll be there. You'll be able to maintain as long as you don't do what they did. Even, you know, because you will not defile the land as the nations of Canaan did originally, since you will not defile the land, you're not going to get kicked out. So the interesting thing, it's okay. I mean, if God says, look, we're giving B'nai Yisrael the land of Israel, but there's a condition. You have to do it. I mean, everybody knows when you buy a house, you're in a neighborhood. That neighborhood's going to have certain limits. You can't go into any business you want. You can't do different. So we have a kind of a deal. We have a deal with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that as long as we maintain a certain amount of connectivity to Torah, we won't be expelled from the land. If we don't maintain that, we will be expelled from the land. Nevertheless, these words, the pasuk talks about the land of Israel as though it was a living organism. And I'll remind myself of that transgression of Itakia Aretz et Yoshvea, and the land will vomit out those who live in the land. The land will vomit out. I mean, I don't understand exactly what the Torah is trying to tell me. I can understand that we'd be punished here. The Jews, the 10 tribes were exiled by an army. The Assyrian army exiled the ten tribes. The Babylonian army exiled the other tribes, what was left. The Roman army exiled the Jews who lived in Eretz Canaan at that time. What does this mean? What does it mean to say "Vataki ha'aretz et Yisrael"? I mean, you could say it's a kind of a parable or a metaphor. You could say that. Rashi, however, Rashi says this: "Lo taki ha'aretz etchem, vomit." Well, if you do the right thing, you won't be vomited out. Mashal ben Melech. It's like I'll tell you a story about the king, the son of the king. Shechiluhu davar ma'us. It fed him something, I guess, rancid, something that wasn't good. She'ein omed b'beyav ela mekiyo. He can't swallow it. He vomits it out. Kein Eretz Yisrael, Rashi says. Kach Eretz Yisrael. That's how it is with Eretz Yisrael. Einam mekayemet ovrei avera. Eretz Yisrael can't kind of stomach people who transgress. And then he quotes the Targum of Ukulus, right? That it kind of purifies. It's a purification process, vomiting. But again, why did the Torah tell me this? Why did the Torah just say, you're going to be punished? Be punished severely. You're going to lose your connection. You're going to lose the connections. I think that we have to think in terms of, the fact that we're the only nation in the world that received its dwelling directly from God. I mean, we don't know how every nation, the Ramban will teach us something about that in a moment. We don't know how the Babylonians got to Babylonia, how the Indians came to India, how the English came to England. I mean, how was that part of the divine plan? But we know how we came to Eretz Yisrael. It was designated as the proper place for us to live because it had some sort of connection to the Torah. You couldn't live there if you didn't keep the Torah. That's what the pasuk says. And so we still don't understand why this idea of vomiting out the people who lived in Eretz Yisrael makes sense to us today. And I think that the Ramban is helpful. So let's learn a little bit of the Ramban together. Ramban starts off by saying, Echmir HaKatuv V'Arayot. The Torah is very zealous in its obligation, in creating an obligation for us against sexual indiscretion. Bavur ha'aretz, because of or in favor of the land, shetitma b'hen, because if we're not careful about this particular matter, we're going to be sorry. V'taki ha'nefashot ha'osot, and the land will vomit out those people who do this non-acceptable sexual activity. And so he goes on and says, "Videi arayot chovat aguf." He says, "I don't understand. Isn't like arayot something you do with your body? I mean, it's like an action that you take. And if it's an action you take, einan tluyot ba'aretz. So what's it got to do with the land? Why did the Torah just tell me it's forbidden? And if somebody does it, so he's punished like everything else. What is this connection that the Torah makes between the transgression of arayot and the land?" And then the Ramban says, "Sod hadavar." He doesn't mean Kabbalistically. He means clearly. If you think about it, you'll understand the connection between the land and the punishment and the transgression. You'll understand it. So Sod HaDavar B'Katuv She'amar, he quotes a pasuk that relates to this matter. And what does that pasuk say? That's a pasuk in Hazinu. Banchel Elyon Goyim. Bafrido b'nei Adam, yatsev gvulot amim v'gomer. Let's do it again. Banchel Elyon Goyim. Banchel is nachala, inheritance. When God gave each of the nations of the world its place and said, every place is going to have a different language. You remember that they tried to build a tower that went up to heaven, and as a result, they were granted different languages to speak, so they couldn't get together. So what does the pasuk say? Barchel El Yon Goyim. When the Elyon, when God gave Nachala to the nations, Ubahafrido b'nei Adam, when he separated groups of people from each other, Yatsev Gvulot Amim, he, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, made boundaries. All the English speakers, here. All the French speakers, here. All the German speakers, here. All the Ukrainian speakers, there. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. Yichelik Hashem Amo. However, there's a difference. The way God treated Am Yisrael, to make them Amo, their nation. Well, everybody had a different language, so there's a question. The pasuk is not clear because we don't understand. What did Yichelik Hashem Amo? What did God give to his nation that he didn't give everybody else? Everybody had a place and a language. Place and a language. Vayinyan. Ki Hashem HaNichmad Bara Hakol. Here's the Ramban. The Ramban says we have to understand. Hashem HaNichmad. Hashem HaNichmad is a way of saying, I know something about God. Nichmad, he's honored. Bara Hakol, he created everything. V'sam koach ha'tachtonim v'elyonim. And the power that drives the engine of creation in the lower created world comes from the higher world. V'natan al kol am v'amar tzotam l'goyehem, and he allowed every nation, kol am v'am, you see, kol am v'am, every single nation, v'artzotam, in their particular place, l'goyehem, in their particular kind of ethnic, their ethnic being, kochav, umazal, yadua, they gave them a star, a constellation that was well known. Kasher nodabit stagninut, as we know from the famous astrologers of the time, they knew what constellation in heaven controlled the things in one nation and which constellation was in another nation. V'zeu sh'ne'emar, asher chelek Hashem, chalak Hashem elokech otam, l'kol ha'amim, that somehow God allowed them all to retain this distinction. As each nation had its power, its support, its constellation that was looking after them, ki chalak b'kulam mazalot b'shamayim, and God arranged for these constellations, in heaven, to be in control. Ugvohim alechem, ugvohim alechem alechei elyon. And above the constellations was angels, the angels around God. Nitanam liyot sarim aleihem. So the angels became like more dominant over them. Kinyan shekatuv. So I wanted just to try to understand what the Ramban. What the Ramban is doing. The Ramban is explaining to us what the meaning of Avodah Zarah is for non-Jews. Right? The meaning of Avodah Zarah for non-Jews is that they're usurping the order of things. They apparently, according to the Ramban, would be allowed to worship a multiplicity of gods if they just did it right. Again, I just want you to understand. I want you to understand that according to the Ramban, the Jewish people, Am Yisrael, left Mitzrayim in a state of confusion. They were not certain that Moshe Rabbeinu was representing the only God that they should worship. And apparently, I mean, this is what I'll just tell you what it says in the Chumash, that when they came to Yamsuf, when they came to this great barrier, this water, which wouldn't let them go forward, and they heard the Egyptians approaching behind them, they were really not confident that their problem had been solved. And on the other hand, the Egyptians were not confident, that they had lost. They didn't think, even though that they had gone through terrible pain, the 10 plagues, then the Makat Bechorot, the firstborn, the death of the firstborn. I mean, the Egyptians had gone through this terrible situation, and here they are, chasing after Bnei Yisrael. And the reason that the Egyptians were able to chase after Bnei Israel was because they did not believe in one God. They did not believe in one God. And it was as though the Rambam, according to this Ramban, according to what the Ramban is saying, that God understood. They understood. I mean, in order to take the idolatry out of Bnei Yisrael, they had to be slaves in Egypt. So you have this picture. Bnei Yisrael is stuck at the water, and the Egyptians are coming after them. Bnei Yisrael do not have confidence that they have solved the problem and that the life is going to start anew. And so Moshe Rabbeinu says, somebody jump. Jump in, it'll be all right. And fortunately, such a person was discovered. Nachshon, who jumped into the water. The water split, the Jews came through. The Egyptians could not believe that there would be a God that would be uniquely connected to. Could not believe that there'd be a God that's uniquely connected to the Jewish people and would not give them the benefit of some sort of doubt. And so they chased along, and the waters collapsed, the Egyptians were killed, the Jews were saved, and it's about that moment in the history of the world that the Torah says, V'yaminu v'Hashem uve Moshe Abdo, that the Jews believed in God and believed in the God's servant Moshe Rabbeinu. So this passage from believing in a multiplicity of gods to believing in one God that supports everything in the world was difficult. It was difficult even though you individuals, Avraham Avinu, Yitzchak Avinu, Yaakov Avinu, individuals were able to rise to the occasion. But at that time, they were not able to pass that idea down to their children. Avram was able to teach Yitzchak, but he was not able to teach Ishmael. Yitzchak was able to teach Yaakov, but he was not able to teach Esau. So that the idea that there's one God in the world was apparently a difficult idea. It was a difficult idea to absorb. And so here the Ramban is saying, what the Ramban is saying is that the world was organized. The world was organized in a way that idolatry was permitted. It was acceptable for those people who lived in the idolatrous creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The idolatrous creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the constellations, the mazalot, the stars. All of those things had an effect. Had an effect, and the people said, that makes sense. It makes sense that that's if you look at the Rambam, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek Aleph, they said, well, it makes sense. If God gave power to, God gave power to the constellations, to the mazalot. So of course we should be thankful to them. We should turn to them. And so if he didn't go through that process, which we've talked about otherwise, like being enslaved to people who are of no consequence, we didn't realize somehow that God is one, that there's a uniqueness to everything about God, then you would not be able to inherit the land. So by Yaminu Bashem, even though the nation, it means that the nation, but not that there can't be any transgressors. Of course they could be transgressors, but the nation, there was a moment when the nation as a nation believed in Hashem Echad, and that moment became the critical moment in the creation of Am Yisrael. So what Avram couldn't do, and Yitzchak couldn't do, and Yaakov couldn't do. Yaakov, you know, had the better sons and less good sons, Yaakov. But what that couldn't do, they couldn't teach their children. They could teach the unique children, but they couldn't teach all their children. That took place at Vayaminu Vashem Moshe Abdo at the Kriyat Yamsuf. That's when it happened. That's when it happened. That B'nai Yisrael was able to see themselves as being distinct from all the other nations. The other nations were all idolatrous. And that was the way it might be. But Am Yisrael was not going to have that idolatrous underpinning. And so you see here, I've underlined B'nai Hashem, right, a few lines down. God is the only one. The Chol Olam, it's true that God runs the world. But Eretz Yisrael, so you have to understand, Eretz Yisrael, and Tzaut HaYishuv, He Nachalat Hashem, this is, and Tzaut HaYishuv, the middle of the place where people dwell, the middle meaning, then when goodness comes down from heaven, it goes first to Yerushalayim, to the Beit HaMikdash, to Yerushalayim, to Eretz Yisrael, and then to the entire world. That's Emtzaut HaYishuv. He Nachlat Hashem Yuchedet Lishmo. That is Nachlat Hashem. It's the place of God. So you have to remember. You know, when you get a present, sometimes you get a present. It's such a nice present. I wish you all nice presents, happy occasions. And you look at that present years later, you say, oh, I remember who gave it to me. Because it had the stamp of somebody's understanding, of somebody's cultural assessment of things. You see in the presence, you see the person who gave it to you. And that's what the Ramban is saying. He says, Nachlat Hashem, it's the inheritance of God, Yuchedet Lishmo. It is uniquely connected to the name of God. So every time you're there, whenever you're in Eretz Yisrael, that's what you see. You see the one who gave you the land. Lo natan alav min ha-malachim katzin shoter u-moshel. So since it's God's gift, to us. And so when we come to Eretz Yisrael, you know, the Rambam quotes the Gemara, the Rambam was very much a reasonable person. He said, you come to Eretz Yisrael, you fall down on your face and you kiss it. What do you mean you fall down on your face? Why would you do that? Well, because there's a certain kind of living. It lives, Eretz Yisrael. It breathes. And what does it live and what does it breathe? He says, Miuchedet Lishmo, Lo Natan Aleh, so God did not place angels to dominate Eretz Yisrael. Ktzin Shoter Moshe didn't give any kind of leadership positions to angels who would take care of things. God did not. He did not do that. Well, he did that to all the other nations. And the Pasuk, as you know, said you're going to be a skula lechol ha'amim ki li kol ha'aretz. Ki li kol ha'aretz. It's the present. It's given to us. Rabbi Kodesh Baruch Hu. Given to us means it has that stamp of a Kodesh Baruch Hu on it all the time. You just have to let yourself do it. Let yourself feel it. And you'll feel it. You'll feel it because so many Jews in so many generations and so many times have laughed and cried and spoken and only about Eretz Yisrael. that the uniqueness of the place is obvious to all those who allow it, who allow it to be. So the reason that we understand that Eretz Yisrael is unique, and that the punishment of defiling Eretz Yisrael is exile, because God's stamp on the matana that he gave to us after promising it to Abraham, that matana has somehow the taste of the Ribbono Shel Olam in it. And therefore, we have to be careful. We have to be careful that while it's true that not everybody in Eretz Israel, you may have noticed, is devoted to halacha, nevertheless, I think it just means that the people who are devoted to halacha have a greater obligation. They have to take care of things. They have an obligation not just to take care of themselves, but to take care of things. I want to mention that next week is Yom Ha'atzmaut. I won't give a shiur. I will not give a shiur next week. But tonight is Yom HaShoah, and I would like to say something. I'm not going to say it, but I'm going to read what Rabbi Soloveitchik said when he joined the Mizrahi party in America. So if you look, this is the second sheet, Rabbi Soloveitchik, this is Yom HaShoah is a time when we're supposed to remember. Of course, remembering is a difficult notion, and there's got to be a reason. There's got to be something that remembering brings me to action. And I just heard Rabbi Lau, the elder, said that the mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek has two parts to it. Zachor, to remember, and then Lo Tishkach. You don't forget. What's the difference between remembering and not forgetting? And he said there was a difference between remembering something and being called to action. So here's what Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote. He says, I was not born into a Zionist household. Of course not. The family was very starting for Rav Chaim. Also, even Rav Moshe. And he says, my parents' ancestors, my father's house, my teachers, my colleagues, were far from the Mizrahi religious Zionists. That was kind of a understatement, as they say. They were very far from Mizrahi. He's talking at a Mizrahi convention. They too held, why meddle in the secrets of the merciful one? Meaning, why should I try to rush things? Why should I try to create a redemption if heaven is not redeeming us? Why meddle in the secrets of the merciful one? If I now identify with Mizrahi against my family tradition, the Rav said, he said, I'm trying to explain myself. He said, because what I'm doing, how come I went against my family tradition when I could have. I could have just not said anything. It is only because, as previously clarified, I feel that divine providence ruled like Joseph against his brothers. I feel that divine providence, that means the hashgacha, the way God runs the world, ruled like Joseph and against his brothers. Because all the brothers were against Joseph. But Joseph won, that he employs secular Jews as instruments to bring to fruition this his great plans regarding the land of Israel. And you know that this was one of the major arguments. How could you go to Eretz Israel How could you go to Eretz Israel? After all, it's full of people who are building the land but are not religiously connected. So he says it is possible that he employs secular Jews as instruments to bring to fruition his great plans regarding the land of Israel, that the secular Jews somehow have an advantage in rebuilding the land. And I imagine that that was God's plan. I also believe that there would be no place for Torah in Israel today were it not for the Mizrahi. I also think that the Mizrahi has created a foundation for Torah. I built an altar upon which I sacrificed sleepless nights, doubts, and reservations. The Rav says about himself that this was not an easy thing for me to do. Regardless, the years of the Hitlerian Holocaust, the establishment of the State of Israel, and accomplishments of the Mizrahi in the land of Israel convinced me of the correctness of our movement's path. So you know, it's not easy to know what's actually going on. It's not so easy to know who is walking side by side with God and who may be a few steps behind. But I imagine that this was not an easy decision for Rabbi Soloveitchik to make. And I heard today was Yom HaShoah, tonight is Yom HaShoah, remembering, I was supposed to remember the Holocaust. And I interviewed a woman on the radio who was a survivor. She said, well, they asked her, how does she feel? So she said she loves Israel. She loves what we've accomplished. She is not swayed by the fact that politics sometimes seem childish and irrelevant. And that the creation, this I'm adding, that the creation of the State of Israel as it is today, is something of a miracle. And when we say miracle, we don't mean magicians kind of miracle. We say miracle, what we mean is that it's hard to explain without seeing clearly God's help, that this is something special, something special that happened. So I think with this I will close. I think that Yom HaShoah, Yom HaZikaron, and Yom HaAtzmaut are all part of the same holiday. All part of the same holiday. And it's a holiday that deserves a time of reflection, moments of sadness, and a time of great joy. It's all there. It's all there. It could be to have it on the same day, but it makes sense. I remember I found it difficult when I was first came to Israel, but today I think that it makes all the sense in the world. I wish you all well. As we said at the beginning, there won't be a shiur next week. So I wish you well, Yom HaShoah this week, and then Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. Next week, all the best. We'll be back in 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
Thank you, Rabbi. Chodesh Tov.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.